Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris, and this is the EdShift podcast.
Our goal at EdShift is to dive into educational trends and practices and to connect you with education leaders and innovators from around the world who are committed, in subtle and in grand ways, to shifting the fabric of education. Through their approach to pedagogy, policy, tech, and everything in between, we're exploring the ideas and actions driving educators globally. Check out the show notes and resources for ways to connect with us and our guests, as well as bonus lesson content connected to each episode's conversations.
Welcome, everyone. We are excited to have you here with us listening to the EdShift podcast today. You know, Katie, one of the topics that's been on my mind quite a bit lately is thinking about, you know, culturally responsive teaching and what are the teaching practices and what can we do in our classrooms to allow students to connect with both their peers and their learning in meaningful ways. And today in the podcast, we're going to dive in and talk specifically about Indigenous populations, their challenged and storied histories, and how we can connect to, explore, and learn from them in our classrooms. And what's exciting, I don't think exciting is the right word, what's interesting about this is we have a really unique opportunity to have these conversations in our classrooms as history unfolds around us with the Declaration of the Truth and Reconciliation Day in Canada. So before we get started, Katie, can you give everyone a little bit of context, especially me and my American colleagues? What is Truth and Reconciliation Day?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. Thank you. So Truth and Reconciliation Day is a federal day that was recently announced here in Canada that has been set aside, you know, as a federal, quote, holiday to recognize and acknowledge the findings and the importance of the Truth and Reconciliation Report. Now, this report, which was released in 2005, came from the Truth and Reconciliation Committee that took several years to gather thousands and thousands of pieces of information, interviews with survivors of residential schools and other harmful policies that have existed in Canada. And the report put together 94 recommendations or calls to action that can help us take steps to move towards more equitable society for our Indigenous people. Today in Canada, Indigenous people are really overrepresented in places like foster care, in jails and prisons, and there's some really significant inequities across our country's systems, and that definitely includes education. So these calls to action really aim to help us as a country work towards righting some of these systemic inequities that Indigenous people have faced really since settlers came to this country. One of the pieces that comes up in this conversation is some of the things that happened this past summer here in Canada that really, you know, revealed and brought to the forefront of our conversations again, the tragic history of the residential school system, where Indigenous students were forcibly removed from their families and from their communities. This past summer, several graves of children that died while they were in the residential school system across the country were discovered. And so this conversation in Canada has, as I said again, really been brought to the forefront and really been a focus and something that feels more important than ever to address and to address in meaningful ways.
No, I agree with you completely. This is such an important topic and something that we want to think about, you know, how we address in our classrooms. So I'm really pleased to have Darren McKee with us today to talk about this and to share some thoughts and ideas around these conversations. So let's dive into the conversation.
Hi, Darren. Thank you so much for being here with us on the EdShift podcast today. It's an honor to have you here to chat with us. Darren, I'll let you introduce yourself to our audience.
Sure. My name is Darren McKee. I come originally from Okotoksepe First Nation in Manitoba. I live now in beautiful Treaty 4 territory, which is in Regina, Saskatchewan. And currently work for the Saskatchewan School Boards Association.
Awesome. Thanks, Darren. We're really excited to talk to you today about what, you know, reconciliation can look like as part of education and in schools, particularly in light of the new upcoming Canadian holiday focused on truth and reconciliation in Canada, but certainly a topic that is important all around the world. So, Darren, to start us off with part of that conversation, when you think about the idea of reconciliation as it relates to education at the policy level, at the regional level, at the classroom level, what role can education play in reconciliation?
Well, I always start by sharing, you know, a good friend of mine, Justice Murray Sinclair, who spent a great deal of time working on you know, the whole notion of residential schools and reconciliation, often refers to the fact that it was education that got us here, you know, in terms of the creation of residential schools as a policy of the government of assimilation, and it will be education that gets us out. And so, you know, it's a very foundational piece of what we need to think about when we're talking about, you know, where do we go from here? We really need to understand the importance of education in terms of moving this agenda forward, and in particular for non-Indigenous people.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about the different levels of the conversation, is there a level that you feel is more important? Like, do you feel the classroom level is more important than the policy level? What role do you see all of those different parts of the puzzle playing?
I don't know that I would, you know, say that one is more important than the other. I think part of this is making sure that we're touching all of those areas, you know, whether it's within the context of the classroom or for that matter, within the boardroom. I think everybody has a role to play within the context. And the one thing that I do know about, you know, the whole notion of the teaching of residential schools and the history, if you will, of Indigenous people is the challenge, because it's a personal journey, really. You know, we can talk about it systemically, you know, how important it is from a board context or a school division context or a provincial Ministry of Education context, but ultimately, it's a personal journey, and we have to give the opportunity for every individual to personally understand and appreciate, first of all, what it is that they've learned about Indigenous people and where they've learned it and how they've learned it in order to move forward. And so, you know, I think it's really important that we do both, that we provide the opportunity systemically for people to understand and appreciate how things need to change, but also we really need to allow individuals to explore this on their own. You know, we often talk about, you know, I often share with folks that you won't reach a person's head if you haven't reached their heart. And I think that's really important when it comes to this particular subject area.
I think that's a really great point. And I like how you framed it as an individual journey. And it makes me think, Katie and I had the opportunity last week to talk to a bunch of students about, you know, their experience in school and the things that they were looking for. And one of the things that came out of that is our students really want to explore these topics, and they want to grapple them, and they want to understand them. And so when we're looking at this and thinking about the individual journey, are there things that, you know, at the building level, schools can do to help support both their teachers and their students as they kind of start this journey and learn how to navigate it together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you need to be deliberate with folks about the conversations. I don't think everybody's prepared to have the conversations. You know, as we start to think about, you know, what's happening in Canada, what's happening in Saskatchewan, as an example, with the finding of many of these the graves of children who attended residential school, as an example. How do you talk about that as a teacher with young children? I mean, the young children want to talk about it. They want to know what's going on, but we find ourselves in a difficult position because we don't have a background in it as a teacher, as an example. So we have difficulty talking about it. And I think, you know, what I would say is that we need to be deliberate. We need to be purposeful in recognizing that this is an area that folks, particularly young people, are interested in. And that those of us that are charged with providing opportunities for learning need to do our best to provide those in an unbiased context. And so, you know, I think it needs to be a deliberate journey for each of us to prepare for those questions and prepare to engage in that conversation.
What role do you think the involvement of our parents and our communities can play in this? When we think about, you know, that aspect of identifying where we're coming from, the bias, you know, moving on that journey and creating a safe space to have these conversations, can we support our larger community and parents to facilitate that?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, we've always said, and, you know, I come from a very sort of traditional context, where learning is life and life is learning, right? And so, you know, to sort of say that the only learning and the only opportunity to learn happens within the walls of four walls of a classroom is I think really short-sighted. I think we always need to engage parents, whether we agree or disagree, or you know, whether those are hard or easy conversations, to engage them in the learning program of their children. And this in particular is one of those areas where we have to spend a great deal of time providing opportunities for collaboration and growth together.
I love that quote of you know, life is learning and learning is life, because, you know, if we aren't learning, if we aren't moving, then we're standing still and we're not doing ourselves and the people around us any favors. I think that's so important to keep in mind, and that the inclusion of the rest of our learning communities with this conversation is only going to help us take it forward and to really be honest, and giving both parents and students the tools that they need to have these conversations outside of the walls of the classroom. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Katie, as I think about, you know, having worked in this area for many, many, many years, and oftentimes, you know, I'll have folks come and ask, you know, the questions about, so, you know, what do we need to do, and these sorts of things. I feel like, you know, putting this great big picture on my wall with the word more on it, and just pointing to that. What do we need to do? We need to do more, and we need to be deliberate about doing more in terms of dealing with these kinds of issues. You know, it's an issue that, while, you know, specific to me and my history and where I come from, specific to Indigenous, but it's pervasive in many areas. It's not just about Indigenous people. You know, it's about colored people. It's about you know, sexual diversity. It's about all those things. And so I think the lessons are critical. And wherever you want to start and wherever you want to go, I think are important.
Absolutely. And we talk about identity and allowing students to bring their full identities to our classrooms and have every part of them be seen, you know, so that certainly plays into all of our students' lives. Darren, I'm going to switch gears a little bit because I'd love to chat about some of your background, as well as some of the more traditional methods of educating, of teaching, that are prevalent in our Indigenous communities. And what can classroom teachers, you know, or school leaders learn from some of these traditional approaches?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Chris, because I sometimes have to, I guess, engage in a conversation about what traditional means, because I think sometimes when people use that term, they think it's ancient or old or in the past, where, you know, in terms of Indigenous knowledge, and ways of knowing, it's absolutely as alive today as it ever was. The unfortunate part is it's not valued to the same degree as it always was. And so, you know, as I sort of contemplate that kind of a question about, you know, how do you bring it together? You know, again, I'm reminded a bit of, you know, where technology is today, because people think, well, you know, as an Indigenous person who has some appreciation for the historical context of, you know, my ways of knowing and my knowledge, how do I combine that with technology? And I guess foundationally, I would say it's, you know, without going, you know, too deep into particular areas, it's all about relationships. When we talk about, you know, Indigenous knowledge and ways of knowing, it's about relating to things. And technology, you know, sometimes is that bridge to relating things in a different way, in a very technological way. And, you know, for us, for me, you know, I think about the relationships between people. You know, oftentimes you'll hear our folks say, you know, we always have tea before we talk. Well, you think about that, right? It's about forming those relationships. It's about kinship. You know, where I come from, we talk about making relatives. And so once we've made those relatives, it's like having the conversation with you two today, right? So now we've got this relationship. We have some social capital invested in each other. And so and now we begin to form opportunities to learn and grow together, and it's about no longer being strangers, if you will. And then you can start to talk about who I am and where I come from and what I know, and with each of you learning a little bit more about who you are and where you come from. That's how, you know, we approach things from an Indigenous sort of perspective. And it's the same with our learning, right? We think about learning from the land. There's something that is very fundamental to all Indigenous people, regardless of where you come from. And that is our connection to the land and the water. And so that's where it begins. But then we talk about the connections to other things, right? And so we're not sort of just one homogeneous society. You know, my wife is Nahewak, which is, you know, in English, they talk about Cree people. I'm Anishinaabe, which is different. It's a different nation. There are some similarities, but there are some significant differences as well. And so, you know, I think it's about making those connections and relationships. And it's a constant thing in my life, right? Understanding the relationships between things and among things. And it's the same for our classrooms. I think, you know, when we start to value that Indigenous knowledge and Indigenous ways of knowing, we'll begin to understand how important those are to the development of an individual, of a human being.
There's so many things I love about that. So the idea of relationships, and the saying we hear all the time is, you know, students don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so this notion of the really building the relationships and understanding each other as we learn together and navigate that space. And then I also like that expansion of it to, you know, how do we help students see themselves in the learning by making the connections to their ways of learning and the ways they see things and learning from that. I love to talk about, and I steal this from Danny Bauer, everybody's individual bands of greatness. And I feel like it's kind of a celebration of that, because you talked about, you know, the differences between everyone within a culture and how we can start to appreciate that in the classroom. And so I wonder if you think specifically about a classroom, when you think about students being able to see themselves and build relationships in that classroom, what does that look like?
Well, I think giving children are you know, naturally curious, and I think it's really fostering the opportunity for them to explore, right? You know, as children, again, you know, my bias is that I've been involved in the education system for, you know, the last 30 plus years, And so, you know, I see its warts along with its opportunity. And I think one of those is that we sometimes try to get through the curricular requirements as opposed to teaching kids, right? And sometimes I think that we need to spend more time letting kids understand who they are and where they come from and what their gifts are, you know, those bands of strength, if you want to call them that. You know, as growing up, you know, if I was 12 years old and I think back and I wonder why I never learned to play the fiddle as an example, it was because I never asked. That wasn't my area of interest particularly at that time. And so, you know, there are things I think we have a tendency that we focus on and value in a modern day, if you want to call it that, contemporary education system that may take away from the opportunities for kids to get to know each other, get to learn together, to get to grow together, and to find their own ways of greatness amongst themselves. You know, I once was at a talk where the speaker was sharing some insights about play, about the importance of play. And he said, you know, if you put 10 children together on a field and let them play, there will be no narcissism. Because what happens to those kids that are narcissistic, right? They're no longer invited to play. There are lessons to be learned from children, right? They can control and manage each other, but they can do that in a way that allows everybody in. And I think sometimes as adults, we get in the way of that because of our own biases and our own ways of trying to, you know, validate who we are or protect or whatever the reason behind it.
Yeah, whether that reason is rooted in logic or trauma or all, you know, all any of the above combinations. Yeah, absolutely. Darren, I'd love any resources or places that you would want to point our listeners who are looking for opportunities to discover more about, you know, bringing Indigenous ways of thinking and knowing or support for having reconciliation-focused conversations into their classroom. Where might you point them?
Well, I think you guys have talked a little bit about the truth and reconciliation and the calls to action. You know, certainly I would point them there. It's a good place to start. There is, you know, as I guess one of the unfortunate things is that Indigenous people in Canada are one of the most studied people in Canada. So there are lots of reports and studies and, you know, those sorts of things. If you know, folks want to do some research that way, certainly there's lots of some great books that are just coming out. Daschuk, I think, is one, Clearing the Plains, that, you know, has just recently come out. So there are those kinds of intellectual. We have lots of scholarly sort of books that are recently come out, but I guess what I would encourage people to do is to engage with our communities. The best way to get to know and find out more is to engage with those who, you know, who are ready and willing to share some of those things. And that, you know, I can't say that's happened a lot. You know, as I talk to folks, you know, how many have spent some time in one of our communities? There's not a lot of people that have because, you know, for many reasons, I guess, but there are a great deal of resources there and a great deal of willingness to help and support people. So certainly that's another way to do this.
And I love that idea of building those relationships and starting to make those connections by reaching out. If someone wanted to do that, I think sometimes, you know, we talk to teachers and they don't always know where to start in this. Like, what would be a great first step if, you know, I'm a building principal or a teacher and I want to start to build that bridge and make those connections? How do I get started doing that?
Well, hopefully, you know, certainly if you're working in Canada, you know, we have a lot of our divisions and our school boards now have resident, if you will, leaders on Indigenous education. And so they're a great conduit. But if there's not, you know, that connection between your school divisions or school boards, there are community groups, there are tribal councils, there are First Nations leaders who are quite willing to make those connections. Obviously, there are lots involved in our post-secondary education institutes as well that can help make those connections for folks. I realize that sometimes the hardest step is the first one, but I think once you get through that first step, you'll find a lot of support, a lot of opportunity for growth, and would encourage folks to do that.
Excellent. And so I'm looking at this from across the border as an American, but I think we recognize a lot of, you know, similar things that we could be exploring here with our history. Do you have any advice for us or resources you would suggest for those who don't have the same connections that we might find in a Canadian experience?
Yeah, similarly, I'm not sure that, you know, within the context of the education systems, there is as much in terms there, but certainly in terms of the community strength, you know, we don't see the border. And so, you know, I don't necessarily differentiate between us and our good American friends. You know, my brother lives down in the States and has for many, many years. And so we travel fairly freely. And so what I would say is our communities, again, are our strengths down there. That there is lots of supports and lots of scholarly work being done right now in the United States and into South America as well, that really build on the context of Indigenous knowledge and ways of knowing.
And I'll add, knowing some of the work that I have done within education communities that look a little bit different from a museum standpoint, that often our museums and other cultural institutions can have, and increasingly in the last few years have been making more relationships and connections. So teachers that might feel unsure about where to start, sometimes other local organizations can be a good starting point to reach out and help build those bridges, or help again point to resources. You know, and some organizations and institutions are doing you know, a little better from a reconciliation and a repatriation standpoint, but they're definitely a good opportunity to tie in with the community.
Absolutely. And I you know, Katie, you mentioned post-secondary institutions. That's another great community of scholars that most institutions now across the countries have pretty strong programs that involve Indigenous people. So
awesome. Well, Darren, I really appreciate the conversation today, you bringing your knowledge and your voice here with us. And we have one final question to ask you, and that is, what has the best part of your day been today?
The best part of my day is the same as it always has been, and that is the opportunity to spend some time with my family. I've got just a wonderful partner and I got beautiful daughters, but one is special needs, and so I get a chance every day to test my own humility and my own heart with her every day. And so every day is a gift, you know, and I think people need to understand and appreciate that we have such a wonderful environment, world that we live in, and we need to take the time to get to know it better.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Darren, for sharing that with us and for taking the time to spend here with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
So, Chris, one of the big takeaways that I got from that, and that I really like the way Darren structured the idea of, let's have tea before we talk. I think bringing that into the classroom in the way that we need to know and understand and build relationship with students before we can reasonably expect them to do anything else, you know, before we can reasonably expect to get knowledge through to them, we need to have tea before we talk. We need to build those relationships as the foundation of education.
I think that's so true. And I think I like to take that and take it another step too, to building those relationships throughout the school. So we get to know each other and what we're trying to accomplish in our classrooms. Because when I think about what really sticks with me from this conversation is, you know, be brave and do what's right for kids. And to do that, we have to have the support of our peers. We have to connect with each other and find ways to do that holistically. And then, you know, we can really think about what do our kids need in the classroom? What can we do to do right for them? And that actually reminds me of our conversation not that long ago with the students. And they want to bring the outside world into the classroom. They want to grapple with things that are hard for them to process. And they want a safe space to do it. And they want to do it as a conversation with the community. And we need the relationships and we need to be brave. And so, yeah, what a great conversation. And so much that I'm taking away, but remembering, you know, to take the time to slow down and reflect and connect and then do what's right, no matter how hard it is. Yeah.
As we continue to have different conversations with different people in education ecosystems, so many of the same themes and the same important conversations keep coming up, the same foundations that we need to make sure we're all building on, regardless of our roles within education, right?
Exactly. Awesome. Love that.
Yeah. Well, be sure to take a peek at the show notes. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of EdShift. We look forward to having you join us again next time for another important conversation. And please follow us on Twitter, leave us a review if you enjoyed what you listened to, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.